Welcome to PwC's IFRS Talks, your source for all things IFRS. I'm your host, Laura Kennedy. And if you're getting ready to respond to the ISB's latest proposals on business combinations, then this episode is just what you need. We're joined by Craig Smith from the ISB's project team, who will be telling us not only about the proposals, but also about the history and the story behind them. Hi, Craig. Welcome to IFRS Talks.
Thank you.
So you are a VIP guest, I would say. So can I ask you to please introduce yourself to our listeners and also let us know what you're here to talk to us about today?
Yeah. So my name's Craig Smith. I'm part of the technical staff that works at the IASB. And so for the last few years, I've been the project lead on the ISB's business combinations, disclosures, goodwill and impairment project, which often gets shortened to BCDGI. So I am here to talk today about the exposure draft that the ISB published on the 14th of March with proposals in relation to this project. And so the exposure draft's open for consultation until the 15th of July this year.
Congratulations on getting the exposure draft out. Never easy. And it's been a long project as well, I know. Did you and the team celebrate?
Yes, we had quite a few cakes in the office.
Very important.
We got to play for the whole staff a lovely introductory video that we published at the same time.
Amazing. Yeah, I saw that video. For anyone that hasn't seen it, I would recommend watching it. That's a really, really nice summary, that video. So maybe just to kick things off, for someone who potentially hasn't yet been following this project closely, and I have, by the way, just to get that out there, the first thing someone might ask when they see the name of your project, it's got the word goodwill in the title. Goodwill is an interesting topic for accountants. And I would imagine someone would think, oh, is there going to be any proposal to do with amortizing goodwill? So maybe before we get onto anything else, if I can ask you for a quick answer to that question.
I mean, the very quick answer to that question is no. But the longer version of that is, yes, the ISB considered reintroducing amortization of goodwill in this project. And it spent quite a long time on thinking about that. Because the ISB has many stakeholders who want amortization to be reintroduced and many stakeholders that want to maintain the impairment-only approach to testing goodwill. And both those groups of stakeholders effectively provided the ISB with quite a lot of feedback on this particular topic. The important thing to note in terms of this discussion, I think, is the ISB wasn't deciding which one of these two methods it prefers, but actually because of the context of this project, it was a question about, is there compelling evidence that a change is needed in the accounting for goodwill? So many ISB members acknowledge the pros and cons of both approaches, but ultimately, although there's lots of evidence provided to the ISB, that evidence the ISB took as kind of evidence of stakeholders having very different views of what goodwill ultimately is. And so that conflict basically meant the ISB concluded that it didn't have compelling evidence to change from the impairment-only model at this time.
That's really helpful context. Thank you. There's so many questions where the answer is there's no one perfect answer. Yes. And like you said, it's about, is there evidence to change? So you mentioned the ISB has been working on the project for a long time. I did look at the project page. It started back in 2015, and I think it changed names along the way as well. It wasn't always BCDGI. So before we get into what's in the exposure draft that you've just published, could you maybe share a bit with us about how the project started and the journey you've been on since then?
Yeah, so you're right. The project did start in 2015, and it started as a response to the ISB's post-implementation review, or PIR, of IFRS 3. So that's basically when the board goes back and checks whether new standards are working as they intended. And as part of that PIR, there was various areas to do with the accounting for business combinations the ISB identified as areas of interest. And this project has basically started to try and respond and look at other standard-setting ways that the board can respond to those areas of concern. And so within that, there was the amortization question that we just talked about. But then there was also some other concerns. For example, investors told the ISB that they don't get enough information to help them assess the performance of business combinations after acquisition. So there's a big area of information missing for investors in particular. A lot of people said that or had concerns around the timeliness of impairment losses on goodwill. So the the PIR of IFRS 3 basically explains that as there being, the PIR uses the word lag, but effectively a delay between an impairment event actually occurring and the impairment loss being recognised in the financial statements. So some people externally call this the too little too late problem.
Okay.
And then the last concern that's picked up in this particular project was concerns from preparers in particular that the impairment test is quite costly and is quite complex. And so they wanted the ISB to look at ways to kind of simplify the impairment test.
Okay. Essentially then, the focus is on responding to the concerns from the PIR of IFRS 3, and it sounds like there are three or four buckets there that are interrelated but different pieces. Is that a fair way to summarise the objective of the project?
Yes. Yeah. So I think the objective of the project has been fairly consistent since this project started, barring some minor changes in words. And so the overall objective is basically to try and improve the information that companies provide about acquisitions or business combinations, and but to do so at a reasonable cost for preparers. And so the ISB is trying to look at that whole thing as a package of things.
Never an easy task. So I guess getting onto the meatier part of the discussion, what are the proposals to respond to those comments?
Yeah. So there's effectively two main aspects of the proposals in relation to this particular project. So looking at some changes to the disclosure requirements in IFRS 3, looking at some of the detailed accounting requirements around the impairment test in IAS 36. So in terms of IFRS 3, the ISB is going to propose adding a whole lot of new disclosure requirements. In particular, the two, I guess, key proposals that the ISB is making here are around getting companies to disclose more information about the performance of business combinations. So getting them to disclose in the year of acquisition information about the key objectives and the targets for this business combination, and then subsequently reporting against those key objectives and targets to let investors know where those objectives and targets are actually being met. And then the other aspect of the disclosure proposals that is quite interesting is information about synergies. So just now in IFRS 3, it says synergies are a component of goodwill, and companies have to disclose that that is a component of goodwill if it's a material component. But investors say that they're missing some quantitative information. So this proposal is to bring in some more quantitative information about the actual amount of synergies, the cost to achieve the synergies, how long the synergies are to be achieved for. And that synergies is only in the year of acquisition. There'll be no follow-up information on synergies. And then in relation to IAS 36, the changes are trying to encompass the two aspects I kind of mentioned earlier. So trying to improve the timeliness of impairment losses, but doing so at a reasonable cost. And so, for example, one of the ISB's proposals here is to clarify exactly how companies go about allocating goodwill to cash-generating units for the impairment test to try and improve that's effectiveness. And then the other aspect of the impairment test is trying to reduce the cost and complexity of the test, but without significantly reducing its effectiveness. So they're kind of interrelated to some extent. There's a cost-benefit analysis in both of those. So an example of the cost reduction one is some changes to value in use to try and bring the calculation of value and use closer in line with management's budgets, so companies don't have to do as many changes there. So I think I mentioned earlier that the ISB really sees this as a package of proposals to try and meet the overall objectives. And so the really easy example of that is the concern from the post-implementation review of IFRS 3 about the timeliness of impairment losses. So the ISB's response to that is partly the disclosures and partly the changes to the impairment test.
That makes sense. Maybe if I can touch on then a bit about the disclosures. So there'll be disclosures around, you mentioned, the performance of the business, and then also disclosures around synergies. I remember earlier in the project, there was a discussion paper, and there was quite a bit of concern from companies or preparers about the risk of being required to disclose information that they see as being commercially sensitive information. And there were also some questions around whether the IFRS financial statements is the right home, I guess, is a way to phrase it, for that information. So what is it that the ISB's done thinking about those concerns?
So the ISB, actually, the first thing the ISB did after the discussion paper, the first bit of feedback it discussed was the question about location, because that's such a fundamental question about whether the ISB can actually proceed with any of its views from the discussion paper. Because ultimately, if the ISB concludes it doesn't belong in financial statements, and it has no remit to do this. But the ISB's view is that this information does belong in financial statements. And the reason for that is the ISB views this information to be very related to the assets and liabilities that get recognised in a business combination. And it does that through the information about synergies and the key objectives and the targets. Basically, the reason for that is to try and explain to investors the price paid for this particular business combination. And that price paid is the key determinant then of goodwill in particular that gets recognised in the business combination, but also it's reflected through the fair value of all the other assets and liabilities that get recognised. And so the ISB sees a very clear link between this information and the assets and liabilities in the balance sheet of these companies, and therefore that's why the ISB views this as belonging in financial statements. And in terms of commercial sensitivity, you're right, the ISB heard quite a lot from preparers, in fact almost all preparers who were responding to the discussion paper that the ISB published in 2020 expressed a lot of concern around the commercial sensitivity of this information. And so the ISB has spent quite a long time understanding those concerns and doing a lot of research and further outreach with preparers and with companies to really understand what items of information in particular are commercially sensitive and why is it commercially sensitive effectively, to get a better understanding of the concerns of preparers. But equally, the ISB was aware that it's got a lot of feedback from users, that users really need this information. And so the ISB was effectively trying to balance these two bits of feedback in developing the proposals. And so what the ISB is doing is proposing to go ahead with those ideas, but responding to the preparer concerns about commercial sensitivity in effectively two main ways. So one was to propose an exemption from disclosing some bits of information in specific circumstances, and in particular the bits of information that the ISB has identified through its discussions with preparers that are particularly sensitive. So things like the key objectives, the targets, and synergies information, for example. And then the exemption is kind of built around an exemption that exists in IAS 37 already. So stealing some of that wording. And also the ISB has looked at exemptions that exist in other frameworks, other regulatory frameworks. Try to borrow that to try and help give some useful application guidance, which will hopefully help all of our stakeholders identify when this exemption can be used. And then the other thing the ISB is doing is trying to reduce the cost of actually disclosing the information about the performance of business combinations in particular. So the ISB is proposing that information be required only for a population of business combinations that the ISB is calling strategic business combinations.
So maybe too technical for a podcast. How would you explain it to someone of what is strategic business combination versus your wider population of all business combinations?
So the ISB isn't proposing to define strategic business combinations, but the idea was to try and capture what I guess some investors are going to be called game-changing acquisitions, ones that really fundamentally change the way that the entity is structured. So there's a little brief description of what the ISB is trying to do in the exposure draft. And basically, it's trying to identify business combinations that if they were to fail, that would basically result in the company failing to meet its overall kind of strategy for the whole business. And that's the kind of level of business combinations that the ISB is trying to target here.
So that could be a fairly small population in comparison to the wider population, it sounds like.
It could be, yes. Yeah. So the way the ISB is actually proposing to identify them is through a set of thresholds. So the ISB has said you have to look at the revenue, the operating profit and the assets of the acquired business compared to the total and the existing business. And if any of those are above a kind of 10% threshold, then that would be considered a strategic business combination. They're also trying to capture some qualitative things, because the ISB understands that sometimes there's a really important business combination, but it's quite small, but it's to get access to other types of things. And so there's also some qualitative factors to consider there. So we'd be quite interested in hearing whether that threshold does actually match up with the ISB's aim of reducing the population.
Yeah, I imagine this would be an area, a particularly interesting area to get feedback on. It sounds like it would have been a very challenging area to draft, I imagine.
Yes. Well, and just developing in general, the whole balance between the preparer concerns and the investor needs is something the ISB works quite hard on. Really, the feedback that the ISB is looking for in terms of this exposure draft is whether the ISB has got that balance right. So it's heard a lot from investors that this information is needed. It's heard a lot from preparers that there's a lot of concern about disclosing this. But ultimately, to match these two together, some level of information needs to come out. And it's just a case of where the balancing amount is. And so the ISB thinks it's got the right balance, but is interested in hearing from stakeholders whether that is the case.
Okay. So maybe if I change lanes, I might ask to go back to one of the aspects. You touched on quite a bit earlier, the too little too late with the impairment requirements and the concerns there. Can you touch maybe a bit more in some of the detail of what those the reasons were for those concerns and sort of what the ISB thought about when it came up with the proposals that you mentioned?
So yeah, the ISB did spend a long time talking about the effectiveness of the impairment and the timeliness of recognising those impairment losses, and has had quite a lot of irons in the fire to some extent throughout this project to try and address those types of things. So one of the things the ISB is doing in this area is actually the disclosure proposals that we just talked about, because one of the very first papers you'll read if you go back to the project history page is a list of options to try and improve the effectiveness. And the ISB found out that actually what investors are using the impairment test for is, in the absence of any other information about the performance, they're using the recognition of an impairment loss as a signal that this acquisition has failed. And then the timeliness of those, that signal is obviously a concern from investors. And so those proposals are trying to, the disclosure proposals even are trying to get better, more direct information about what investors are actually trying to use the impairment test for. So that's one aspect of it. And then the ISB went in to look at the details of the impairment test itself and looked at, is there anything about that that's maybe causing some of the concern around the timeliness of impairment losses? And so the ISB identified two main reasons that people might be concerned around the timeliness. The first one is something that's called shielding, or the ISB calls shielding. And basically this is because goodwill isn't tested on its own for impairment, because it doesn't actually generate any cash flows on its own, it gets grouped together with lots of other assets in a cash generating unit. And because it gets grouped together, there can be this thing called shielding, or sometimes people call it headroom, within cash generating units that comes from maybe the existing business has a lot of assets that aren't recognised on the balance sheet, for example, or there's maybe differences between their carrying amount and their fair value. And that basically means that when there's a reduction in value of that cash generating unit, it's first absorbed by those unrecognized things rather than being absorbed by goodwill first. And then the other thing the ISB identified was there were some concerns that maybe the assumptions that are getting used by management in the impairment test might be too optimistic. Optimism is fine, but concern about maybe being too optimistic, unreasonably so. So those are the two aspects of the design of the impairment test that the ISB identified.
So given that there's kind of two aspects there, the management over optimism and the shielding, which is a great word, what exactly from the bits of the proposals you said is addressing each of those two things?
Yeah. So maybe first of all, before I get to the proposals, I'd also say in terms of shielding, the ISB spent a long time actually trying to think of a different impairment test rather than the impairment test that's in IS 36 today. And so the ISB's designed this thing called the headroom approach to the impairment test that tried to build in this element of shielding and this headroom into the impairment test to try and more effectively target goodwill in the impairment test. And many stakeholders didn't like the ISB's idea here, particularly around cost concerns, because it would be a bit more complicated than the existing test. And in some cases, it wouldn't give the most common sense answer. There's very specific cases. And so the ISB basically abandoned the idea of making wholesale changes to the impairment test, but has instead focused on trying to make the existing impairment test more effective. And many stakeholders have given the ISB lots of suggestions on different ways. And so the ISB spent a while investigating those ideas, and it's decided to propose a few of them in this exposure draft to try and improve the effectiveness of the existing test. So in terms of the shielding part of the test, the ISB is proposing some clarifications around the wording about how companies allocate goodwill to cash generating units for the impairment test. Some stakeholders flagged particular bits of the wording in IS 36 that maybe means that companies aren't doing it in the way the ISB originally intended, and maybe are allocating goodwill at a higher level than the ISB initially intended to. And so these clarifications are trying to move the allocation of goodwill down to a lower cash generating unit, which hopefully reduces the amount of shielding in the impairment test. Albeit shielding is part of the design of the impairment test, so it's never going to be eliminated. But hopefully this will reduce that and therefore improve the effectiveness.
And then, so how about management over-optimism? Because I feel like that's a very hard one to tackle in standard settings.
So management over-optimism has been a difficult bit to try and improve. And there's been a lot of discussion around whether there are enough safeguards in IS 36 already. The ISB's view is that there is enough safeguards around the use of over-optimistic cash flows in the impairment tests. It looks at, for example, the requirement to use reasonable and supportable cash flows. It's looking at the requirement to base the cash flows on management's budgets that exist already as sufficient safeguards. However, the ISB is making one change that it hopes will try and improve the visibility of some of the assumptions in the impairment tests. So just now, companies are required to disclose the key assumptions that they make in the impairment test. And the idea of that initially was so that investors who read the financial statements can say, oh, I agree with those assumptions, I don't agree with those assumptions, and basically assess whether those are reasonable. But because of the impairment test being done at a cash-generating unit level, which is much lower than maybe the information investors get around segments, there's a bit of a disconnect. And so the ISB is proposing to require companies to disclose what reportable segment a particular CGU is in.
Okay.
And the idea then is to allow investors to link much better the assumptions in the impairment test with their overall assumptions for the business that they often generate from the segment information and to better assess its reasonableness.
Craig, that was a fantastic overview of the proposals in the exposure draft. It all sounds very interesting, but one thing I wanted to ask you was, what did you find the most interesting aspect to work on, and of course, why?
Yeah, so I found the most interesting bit was actually going out and speaking to a lot of the preparers. So when we heard all of this concern around commercial sensitivity, the ISB and the technical staff working, so me and the rest of the project team, developed these kind of staff examples of what the disclosures might look like if they were implemented. And then we went to a lot of preparers to try and discuss, this is commercially sensitive, this bit isn't, why is it? And I found it very interesting to go and speak to all these different preparers, really to find out what goes out or what goes on in all these different companies and the thought process behind all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. That hopefully helped with you getting your balanced solution. Yeah. Last question then, do you have any personal predictions on what you might hear back on the exposure draft, particularly, you know, which area is going to generate the most comments?
Yeah, so I suspect, despite the ISB's attempts at trying to find a balanced solution, I think what will probably still attract the most comment are the disclosure proposals in IFRS 3. Because I know it's something that both investors and preparers feel very strongly about. And so I expect we'll hear a lot of feedback from both of those groups in particular, but also the rest of our stakeholders.
All right. So I think that's it for our episode today. Craig, thank you so much for joining us. And congratulations again to you and the team for getting out the exposure draft.
Thank you for inviting me.
So just a reminder then, the exposure draft is open for public consultation until mid-July.
15th of July, yeah.
15th of July, and there will also be a link to that exposure draft and the animation that Craig mentioned earlier sitting with the details of this episode. So thanks again, Craig, and thank you to our listeners. To never miss an episode again, remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And until next time, happy accounting.
This podcast has been brought to you by PricewaterhouseCoopers LLP. This content is for general information purposes and is not a substitution for consultation with professional advisors.